views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
So we always say the Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bad fucking protest in them cities. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you dagger riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called a national guard up because we ride with our guard up. And now it's blood in your guard. It's like an amendment on the fly. Lie to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle fingers. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle fingers. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle fingers. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle fingers.
Good afternoon and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm in for this broadcast from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc. Today's date is September the 17th. It is a Thursday afternoon. Yeah, it's Thursday. Last night was New Abolitionist Radio. If y'all missed that program, you should check out the podcast later tonight. We had a couple of guests. This brother from South Carolina, Max, brought on, part of the Black Lives Matter movement in South Carolina. They'll be having like a PBS is going to have a town hall meeting. I believe it's this Saturday, and, Max and, the young man will be there, pushing the abolitionist, message, pushing the fact that slavery was never abolished. We also spoke with Christopher Irvin, a Baltimore activist who is running for city council up there in Baltimore. And yes, he is an abolitionist. He does a lot of research, a lot of work in helping felons get reintegrated back into society. And not only that, works to have their rights restored. And so that was a 2-hour program that was packed with a lot of information, and it was being brought by those two brothers. So just wanted to mention that program. Please check it out later when you have a chance. Let's see. Today, I was going to talk about the GOP debates last night, but as I stated on the last broadcast, I have been making some upgrades to Black Talk Radio Network so that we can do our own in-house podcasting, so that our clients who use our radio streams to operate their own digital radio stations, that they don't have to use a third-party service to then import their podcast into the network. Now they can upload their podcast directly to the network. So I was up, I think, till like 3 or 4 o'clock this morning working on that. And so I wanted to watch the debate. I wanted to watch the circus. But, you know, I was busy. I was busy working. I did DVR it. And I watched some of it. I probably watched about 20 minutes of it. And then I was like, you know, just same old, same old. Let me get back to work. But there are some things that I want to address, that I did not post in the program description. But before I address some of the nonsense that was coming out of the GOP debates last night, today's program description, if you've had an opportunity to read it, is posted at blacktalkradionetwork.com. But I do understand people, tune into this, radio station through various means, and so you're not always able to see what's on slate, what the program description is. So, but today I want to talk a lot about black on black crime, And the reason I want to talk about so-called black-on-black crime is because for in the past 7 days, I have seen 3 high-profile black men promoting the myth of black-on-black crime. And it is a myth. And then I was just thinking today, I was doing some work in the yard, and I was thinking today, where did black-on-black crime come from? Who coined that phrase, black-on-black crime? And I think it may have been coined by KRS-One, who is a hip-hop artist. He's like in his 40s now, but back in 1988, he and other artists, a lot of name, well-known hip-hop artists during that time period, came together to create the hip-hop track called Self-Destruction. And in that track, Self-Destruction, he mentions the phrase black-on-black crime, all right? And so I'm thinking, that I know that's the first time I've heard it, but I can't say, you know, without a doubt that he is the one who coined it, because he could have just been repeating something he heard in the media or something like that. But that's the first time that I heard it. And so it got me thinking today about the origins of the black-on-black crime myth. And it is a myth. And so I just want to share with the listening audience today 3 different instances of high-profile black men, possibly well-meaning, possibly just telling racist white people what they want to hear, possibly trying to protect themselves financially, but they are promoting this myth of black-on-black crime, and we need to stop that, and myself included. I've used it in the past. I've used it recently, you know, in conversation, and I have to, you know, keep training myself to use correct language and to stop just, you know, repeating things that I have heard. And I mean, we're all susceptible to that. I'm not trying to say, you know, anybody out there who uses this phrase is unintelligent or a dumbass or something like that. I'm just saying perhaps they are not thinking deeply about that phrase and its origins and the intent in which it's being used. So I want to talk about these 3 men. Minister Louis Farrakhan, the NFL cornerback for the Seattle Seahawks, Richard Sherman, a listener and a financial donor to the Black Talk Media Project, shared his story with me last night, and also Ben Carson. Ben Carson has been doing it for more than the past 7 days, but he doubled down in an interview with News One using black-on-black crime as a deflection. So did Richard Sherman, and so did Minister Farrakhan. So I'm going to share those 3 stories with you today. Now, I know I said yesterday that I want to limit my broadcasting to 1 hour when my show is or my program is scheduled to come on air, because I'm still doing a lot of work in the background of the network, just trying to improve it to, you know, attract more independent black media producers and give them, you know, a product that works. And, you know, so yeah, but I may have to go over, the hour today, and that's fine. Tando Radio Show doesn't come on till 6 o'clock, and they'll be talking about black homeschooling today as a follow-up to what they were discussing yesterday. And one of the things that, you know, and I chimed in with Brother Dave, one of the things that I discussed yesterday and I'm going to discuss again today is this story that you probably have heard, especially if you are on Twitter, because Black Twitter really came to the defense of the Sudanese American boy. That's what they calling him. He's of Sudanese descent. I imagine one of his parents is Sudanese. I don't know if the other parent is white or of some other ethnicity, but he's a non-white person. And his name is Ahmed Mohammed. And he was arrested and put in handcuffs and arrested and sent to the juvenile detention facility until his parents could come pick him up down there in Irving, Texas, because the young man made a digital clock from scratch from, you know, junk laying around the house, probably circuit boards and digital displays and things of that nature. And I'm not sure the details. I don't know if he was going to enter it into a science project, but he took it to school to show his teacher. And, you know, yesterday I need to correct myself, because I thought it was his engineering teacher that turned him in. And I was thinking to myself, well, wouldn't an engineering teacher know the difference between a digital clock and a explosive device? I mean, if you got a bunch of circuits and stuff in a digital display and it doesn't have any C4, it doesn't have any dynamite, it doesn't have anything like that, you would think an engineering teacher, somebody with an engineering degree, I hope, would be able to tell the difference between a harmless digital clock and an explosive device. But I think it was his English teacher who turned him in. Alright, and said that he made a bomb. And I'm happy to report that the charges have been dropped against him, but, you know, as much tension, as much buzz that his story generated and as much support that he got, including from President Obama, the young man will be going to the White House to meet President Obama. Also, I think Mark Zuckerberg, the creator of Facebook, but really he stole Facebook from two of his college roommates. So I don't want to say the creator of Facebook. Let's just say the owner of Facebook has invited this young man. And so he's been getting a college professor at the Massachusetts MIT. I'm not sure MIT what state that's in, but anyway, it's like a technical school. A lot of scientists and stuff go to MIT, engineers and whatnot. They invited him because that's his dream school, and so it's turned into a positive, but it could have turned into a negative if social media, if Black Twitter did not generate so much outrage on social media about this young man's arrest. And the blatant racial profiling that was practiced against him. And so, but the first time that I saw the story on social media, you know, some of the articles that you share on social media, on Facebook, even Twitter, it will have a photo that accompanies it. And so I see this photo of the young man. He's standing there in his NASA shirt with his hands cuffed behind his back. And lo and behold, in the background, standing there with his arms folded, is a black cop. Now, for those who have been tuning in to Black Talk Radio News, or those who follow me on social media or read anything that I post to social media or any of the articles that I have written, and I am working on a book. Slowly, but I'm working on it, to talk about proxy racism. So, you know, seeing this black cop standing in the background was going to stand out to me, for those who know me, right? All right, because while I believe that black people cannot be racist, they can be tools of racists, okay? And so, I have often heard this saying, that you control what you can control, and then everything else you leave in God's hand. Just do everything that you can do, and then you leave the rest up to, you know, the Creator. And hopefully things will fall in place as long as you did what you were supposed to do. And I don't think, in my opinion, that non-white people, primarily black people, who are the primary victims of racism in the institutional system of white supremacy, I don't think we're doing all that we can do collectively to end racism and white supremacy. Now, I don't think that we could end it all by ourselves, because we don't control white people. We don't obviously don't control white supremacists. We don't control them. But what we can do is control our own behaviors and our interactions with white people. And unfortunately, it is acceptable for black people to work for a system and practice racism against other black people and non-white people. And so I want to talk about Ahmed Mohammed's story, but I want to talk about it from the perspective of proxy racism, because I'm trying to solve the problem. All right, I'm not trying to be a part of the problem. not trying to collect a paycheck from white supremacists, you know, to support myself and carrying out their agenda. I'm not trying to do that. And it is my sincerest desire to encourage others not to participate. And it's not like I'm not putting my money where my mouth is, so to speak, because I lost I'm not going to say I lost it, but I was fired from a very well-paying corporate job dominated. The workplace was dominated by racist suspects and white supremacists. All right. And I stood up and I told this story before, and I was called upon by a black woman's attorney to give a deposition on in her sexual harassment lawsuit, where she was being sexually harassed by the vice president, who was a white man. And you know, she didn't accept his advances or try to move up the corporate ladder by sleeping with this vice president of the company. No, she went and filed the complaint and then filed the lawsuit. And so I witnessed not only him sexually harassing her, but I witnessed him sexually harassing a whole bunch of temp workers as well. I've seen him in many inappropriate situations with some of these black females that was on the job, that was trying to get their foot in the door, get a permanent job working for this corporation that paid very well and had great benefits. And so I lost that job because I was truthful in my deposition. I didn't have to talk to them, but I knew that black woman. I spoke to her every day that I came in to work. You know, I was friendly with her. She was friendly towards me. She knew my mother. My mother worked there as well, you know. And so I just could not turn my back on her in her time of need. And I had to be truthful. It's not like she was asking me to do anything incorrect. She wasn't asking me to lie, because I never talked to her. You know, I knew that I didn't see her anymore. And then next thing you know, I'm getting a phone call. I'm getting a phone call to give a deposition, and I just told the truth. All right. So I'm not asking black people out there to do something that I have not done. All right. And so, you know, if you want to achieve something, there is often sacrifice involved, and there are not enough of us sacrificing to end this system of race, white supremacy, or in the very least, lessen its global impact. So that's the other story that I want to share with you today. Now, getting back to the GOP debate from last night, I want to talk about that briefly. As y'all know, I am an abolitionist. I do believe that slavery was never abolished. It's not a matter of belief. It's a matter of fact. If you read the 13th Amendment, you will notice, hopefully you'll notice, and you'll be able to comprehend that all Lincoln and the Congress in 1865 did was amend slavery. They used the 13th Amendment to amend slavery, not abolish slavery. There's a big difference between amending something and abolishing something. When you amending something, that means you're making some changes to it, you're tweaking it or whatnot, you're amending it. All right. When you abolish something, that means you're getting rid of it. And that is not what happened in 1865. That's another myth that a lot of people like to promote out of habit. It's been drilled into them. I mean, I was even on the program last night. I was engineering the Lotus Place last night, and it was a great conversation. But I mean, there's a lot of people who call in as normal for that program. And, you know, I always notice whenever a black person talks about slavery, well, not just black people, anybody, I always notice when they talk about slavery in a past tense. And, you know, sometimes I will correct them. Sometimes I'll just keep my mouth shut. I was like, you know, I don't want to intrude. This isn't my program. It's not my job to be correcting everybody on other people's programs and whatnot. And, you know, hopefully they will get it. And I've said it to them before. We talked about it in the past. But again, we have to reprogram ourselves. When we've been programmed, with anything, whether it's the truth or whether it's the lie. We tend to repeat those things, okay? It gets in our psyche. It gets in our subconscious, and we tend to repeat those things, all right? So we got to stop repeating those things. That's why I want to talk about black-on-black crime. But getting back to the GOP debate. Last night, Carly Fiorina, I don't know how you pronounce her name. In case y'all didn't notice, I'm not good with pronouncing names. But Carly Fiorina, she's the only female who has been participating in the Republican debates, the GOP debates. They were on CNN last night. And Rand Paul, which I was waiting to see, you know, when he was going to interject, you know, his stance, his libertarian stance against the drug war. All right. I still think he's only talking about reforming it and only abolishing it. But he talked about states' rights last night and the state's right to legalize cannabis and not have the federal government, which the Obama administration has said they have taken a hands-off approach and they're not going after people in these states, even though we have reported that DEA, especially under the leadership of Michelle Lionheart, who I'm not sure she's been forced to resign or not, but they have, despite President Obama saying and Eric Holder saying this is not a priority to go after people in these states that have legalized cannabis, we'll focus resources elsewhere. But the DEA agents did what the hell they wanted to do and was still busting people in California where they have medicinal marijuana legalized. All right. So that topic of conversation, that topic on that issue came up last night. And of course, you know, libertarians are states' rights. And I know a lot of non-white people have been trained to believe that, you know, states' rights is bad and you know, just give it a blanket indictment and whatnot. But it's not really. It's not. It depends on what rights you talking about practicing. And if you're talking about a state's right to allow its citizens to vote on a referendum on whether or not they want to criminalize a plant that has medicinal benefits, whether it's for medicinal use or recreational use. I mean, hell, certainly alcohol isn't illegal. A lot of people drink beer, a lot of people drink wine, a lot of people drink hard liquor. And, you know, those people, unless they go out there and operate a vehicle under the influence and kill somebody, then, you know, that's when they're charged. They're not charged for using the alcohol. They're charged for what they engaged in after using the alcohol, all right, in an irresponsible manner, all right? So when we're talking about states' rights in terms of criminalizing or decriminalizing or legalizing cannabis, I'm all down for those kind of state rights, all right? And so we shouldn't be reactionary when we hear that, all right? So anyway, Carly Fiorina. And it was just so reminiscent of a conversation I had with a former representative, a congressional representative in my district. She used to be the mayor of Charlotte. Her name is Sue Myrick. And she had ran for Congress, which, you know, she was over the district I live in. And I had went to a town hall meeting and I was pushing abolitionism. I was pushing the end for the drug war and whatnot. And so, like Carly Fiorina last night, you know, Congresswoman Myrick shared with me and everybody else in the room a personal story about her daughter's struggles with drug addiction. And Carly Fiorina said last night that she buried a child, her and her husband buried a child, lost that child to drug addiction, although she was kind of, you know, skimpy on the details, and I understand they don't have a lot of time to go into details. And she was like saying that she respects states' rights, but the, you know, she gave this long answer and used that example of her and her husband burying, you know, that child. It was her stepdaughter, from what I heard. It might have been a excuse me. It doesn't matter if they're a stepdaughter or a real daughter. But she said that she lost her to addiction. Now, I haven't had the opportunity to look it up because I didn't plan to bring it up today. But I had to because it was just on television. They focusing a lot on her. You know, this sad story about. This sad story about her losing a child. And that's tragic. That's tragic. But you know what? If she lost a child to drug overdose, which she did not say that. She did not say that, did she? All right. But if she lost a child to drug overdose, it didn't have nothing to do with cannabis. Because there hasn't been a single human being that has OD'd off of cannabis. You can smoke a pound of cannabis. If you can smoke that much, you can smoke a pound of cannabis or eat a pound of cannabis or drink it in smoothies or whatever. You're going to do that. And guess what? You are not going to OD. You might have a real bad case of the munchies. You may, you know, find everything to be funny that ain't funny. But guess what? You are not going to go into, you're not going to die from cannabis poisoning. You can die from alcohol poisoning, but you cannot die from cannabis poisoning unless they have put something on there, like some kind of chemical, like, you know, I heard of people putting embalming fluid and stuff on cannabis and whatnot, you know. But cannabis, the plant itself, if you allow it to dry naturally and cure naturally, just like you would tobacco, even though they put a lot of chemicals in tobacco to get you addicted, you know, you are, will never have an overdose from cannabis. It has never happened. So then she said that last night she was talking about, I think it's sending kids the wrong message to say that, smoking, and they use the term marijuana. I don't use that because it has racist connotations or racist roots. But she talked about it's wrong for, we're sending the wrong message to kids talking about, smoking cannabis is no more dangerous than, consuming alcohol or having a beer, is what she said. Well, depending upon how many beers you have, absolutely, it is more, alcohol is more dangerous than cannabis consumption. And that's a scientific fact. Man, I remember mentioning Michelle Lionheart, the former head of the DEA. At least I hope she's the former head. I haven't done any, I haven't heard about her recently, since she was called to Capitol Hill to explain why those DEA agents was down there in Columbia, engaging in sex parties with prostitutes paid for by the drug cartels down there. So I haven't heard anything since that hearing. So Michelle Lionheart, when President Obama came out, stating science, this is a scientific fact, he said that he used the term marijuana was no more dangerous than alcohol. And then she, in an act of insubordination, came out publicly blasting her boss, President Obama. And so, you know, all that was propaganda. That's what I call reefer madness. And her daughter ain't her daughter or stepchild or whoever losing a battle with drug addiction. And again, I don't know what they died of or if they had a drug overdose or, you know, if they got in a car accident from addiction problem. They could have been addicted to alcohol. I don't know, because they didn't say. They didn't say if she was addicted or he was addicted to heroin, shooting up all this Afghan heroin. I don't know. I don't know if they was addicted to pain pills, you know, oxycodone or what. I don't know if they was smoking that crocodile or crystal meth, or I don't know, because she didn't say. And again, I ain't had time to look into it. But if she did OD from one of those, they ain't got nothing to do with cannabis legalization. Ain't got nothing to do with it. And it's a deflection. It's a deflection to sell your sad story, to get people to feel sorry for you, and to suggest that we need to keep locking up millions of people. Because she's talking about millions of people can identify with her. I don't know if millions of people have been dying of drug overdose. Remember, that's how the drug war got started, with Richard Nixon telling lies exaggerating the number of people who were ODing on heroin. And I think if I remember correctly, it had been that year, maybe 4,000 people that had died. I know I had read some material on it. It said more people had died falling down stairs than had died from heroin overdoses. All right. And so, but that's what Nixon and the Democratic Congress sold the American people to create the Drug Enforcement Agency and what we know now as the modern drug war. And it's got worse and worse in terms of legislation with each subsequent, president. And so that's what I felt like she was engaging in last night. She was engaging in exaggeration. Ain't no, I haven't seen any statistics, and I have looked at statistics on drug overdoses and health statistics. I haven't seen anything to suggest millions of people are out here ODing on drugs. I haven't seen that. If you've seen it, shoot me that information. All right, because I'm not going to take your word for it. Just like I tell people, don't take my word for stuff. Verify everything that I put out to you. I usually provide you with links to the information. And it's up to you to verify. Now, if you've been, you know, verifying the things that I say on this program for the past, since 2007, I've been broadcasting, then, you know, you've come to develop a level of trust with me that I'm not going to come on the airways and lie to you. But I tell you all the time, well, not all the time, but from time to time, I will tell you, verify what I'm saying. Don't take my word for it. Don't take the corporate media's word for it. Don't take your pastor's word for nothing. Don't take nobody's word for nothing without verifying it for yourself. Because they may think they're right, and they think they're giving you correct information. But in fact, you know, they may have been giving you correct information. So, you know, and that's happened to me. So, you know, always verify. So that's what I took that as. And I'm going to take a break. I need to take a station identification break. And what Carly Fiorina and also Chris Christie, who has failed to implement the regulations and the framework to legalize cannabis in New Jersey, even though the voters voted to legalize medicinal cannabis, of course, he got his start with working as a private prison company that locked up children. So of course he don't want to legalize any kind of substance that they locking up people over. And so he was also engaging in what we call reefer madness. And so when I come back, I'm gonna wrap up my commentary on that by sharing the trailer from the hour-long Reefer Madness movie that came out in 1936. In 1936, okay? So, then we'll jump into the black-on-black crime. I should have said this at the beginning of the program, but if you at any time want to jump into the conversation, offer commentary, ask me a question because you want to know where I'm getting my information from or whatnot, give me a call, 641-715-3660. The phone number again is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound. And of course, hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. I will also take your calls. Let me go ahead and open up the studio line. I will also take your calls at 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. So we will come back after this short, I'm just going to do a short station identification break. Stay tuned.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
Now, so, last night, you know, after I had watched that 20 minutes, I did jump on Twitter to tweet out to, because I'll be tweeting at these politicians, man. I don't care. like I may have mentioned to y'all in the past, President Obama's Twitter account has been following Black Talk Radio for at least 2 or 3 years now. And so they do be paying attention to, you know, stuff that's going on and being said on social media. And they will even engage, like President Obama engaged that young man through Twitter last night and said, I want to invite you and your clock to the White House. And so I do. I do tweet at these people. It's very rare that I'll get a response. I've gotten responses from time to time from these showcase people and celebrities and politicians, but for the most part, they just ignore me. I guess, I don't know, maybe they didn't see it. Maybe they don't have a reply for whatever it is that I tweeted at them. So, Washington Post said that Carly Fiorina generated a whole lot of fireworks last night. So I tweeted at them and her. I included her in it, in the tag. I tagged her in it. I said, yeah, she scored a lot of points last night with the Reefer Madness crowd. And I tweeted the video, the trailer to the movie. The movie's over an hour long. It came out in 1936. All right. So this is the trailer to Reefer Madness. Let's go ahead and give it a listen.
These high school boys and girls are having a hop at the local soda fountain. Innocently, they dance. Innocent of a new and deadly menace lurking behind closed doors. Marijuana, the burning weed with its roots in hell. In this film, you will see the ease with which this vicious plant can be grown in your neighbor's yard, rolled into harmless-looking cigarettes, hidden in an innocent shoe or watch case.
If you want a good smoke, try one of these.
You will meet Bill, who once took pride in his strong will as he takes the first step toward enslavement.
Of course, if you're afraid.
Smoking the soul-destroying reefer, they find a moment's pleasure, but at a terrible price. Debauchery, violence, murder, suicide, and the ultimate end of the marijuana addict. Hopeless insanity. See this important film now, before it is too late.
And yeah, so that was that was Reefer Madness. Again, that's a film that came out in 1936. When did Birth of a Nation come out? I'm not sure. I think it was, let me shut that. Around that same time, Reefer Madness, you know, I mean, yeah, Reefer Madness came out around the same time as Birth of a Nation, the Klan movie, the white supremacist, you know, movie that was promoting racism and white supremacy. So there you heard that clip. Some of the things that stood out to me from that clip is talking about Reefer is going to enslave a person. I mean, they are just so blatant, man. They are just so blatant. And the whole time they was planning to pass laws that was part of the public propaganda, got to get the American people behind some racism and injustice. So, you know, and then you got to scare them up. You got to scare them up. And, oh, if you smoke weed, then you're going to turn mad. It's going to make you kill people and all this and that, you know. But then when they talk about it's going to enslave you, no, they was about to pass laws to enslave people. And who were they going to enslave? Let me introduce you to Harry Anslinger or Anslinger. He was the head of the DEA from 1930 to 1962. I don't think that's correct. I don't think the DEA has been around that long, but they might have had some other agency at the time. But we could look it up. I could be incorrect, but I didn't think that the DEA was started until Nixon when they passed that legislation. So there's some conflicts right there. But Harry Anslinger said, Most marijuana smokers are Negroes, Hispanics, jazz musicians, and entertainers. Their satanic music is driven by marijuana, and marijuana smoking by white women makes them want to seek sexual relations with Negroes, entertainers, and others. It is a drug that causes insanity, criminality, and death. The most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. And then it was in the 30s, they criminalized cannabis. They made it illegal. They made it a criminal offense for which you could be enslaved over. And there was also a corporate angle, a greed factor in this. The, what's the name of that family? The Hearst family that owned, you know, the newspaper mogul at the time, the media mogul at the time, who also owned a whole bunch of tree farms. And what do they make newspapers out of? Trees, right? All right. So, make it out of paper. They make, you know, paper comes from trees. Well, He, you know, of course, you can make paper also from cannabis or hemp, a different strain of cannabis, still in the same family. And so, and it grows like weeds. That's where the weed came, the word weed came from. And you wouldn't have to cut down a whole bunch of trees and stuff like that to produce paper and whatnot. You could just grow cannabis or hemp and produce paper. Well, then he would, if that happened, then he was standing to lose some money. Now, you would think he would just say, hey, I could just plant cannabis. Hell, it grows like weeds, so I just, you know, among the trees, plant all this cannabis. Or once I cut down all these trees, I'll just replace it with cannabis. No, he wanted to outlaw cannabis, probably because he was a racist, and he also was, you know, believing or going along with Anslinger talking about, you know, all these white women smoking weed with these black Negro jazz musicians and having sex and all this and that. And so, yeah, let's outlaw this so we can target Mexicans. That's where marijuana came from. That word marijuana is to identify it with Mexican immigrants who were coming across the border in the 30s to work, and they smoke weed. They like to smoke weed, and so it became marijuana to identify it as a vice of Mexicans. All right, and then later, you know, Negroes and whatnot, black people. All right, so this whole reefer madness is sick, man. That here we are in 2015. And regardless of all the science out there, all the scientific study that has been done on cannabis to show it's not only its medicinal or medical benefits, but also to disprove all of these myths about it. All right. And then not only that, it's industrial benefits. So it is just, you know, sickening to me that you got people showcase people, politicians like that, like Carly Fiorina and what's his name? The big guy, you know, the hamburglar, what's his name? Chris Christie. Yeah, you know, it seemed like he got an addiction of food, don't he? From what I've been reading about him, like if he agrees to take a speaking gig, how they gotta have all this kind of food and buffet for him. I mean, well, you know, hell, let's set a limit on calorie intakes and make it a criminal offense, you know, if you eat more than, you know, you should and whatnot. All right. So, but I'm being facetious, y'all. But anyway, yeah, I'm just sick of it, man. And they are only doing, and I know for a fact, I don't know if Carly Fiorina has any private prison stocks. Or she's profiting from any companies that use prison slave labor. I don't know. I haven't looked in her background like that. But Chris Christie certainly does have that in his background. Again, he started out, came on the political scene, straight out of a private prison company that locked up kids. So, yeah, that's all I got to say about reefer madness in the GOP debate. All right, let me see. We got about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. I want to move on to the next story, and I want to discuss the myth of black-on-black crime. Let's go ahead and get this out there now. There is no such thing as black-on-black crime. And I have been guilty of using that, and even in the recent past, in conversation. But I'm going to have to make it my mission to deprogram myself and get that phrase out of my vocabulary. All right. And I know a lot of times when we see people use that, and we not down with it because we know it's propaganda, it's racist propaganda, then we say, well, what about white-on-white crime? Or even like I said the other day, you don't hear anybody talking about white-on-white crime. You don't hear nobody talking about Latino-on-Latino crime or Native American-on-Native American crime. Why is it always black-on-black crime? I shouldn't even do that. I'm not even going to engage in that anymore because I'm helping to promote a myth. There is no black-on-black crime. What you see happening in the community is simply crime, and it happens in all communities. But when you use that term black on black crime, what you're doing is helping racists to promote the notion that black people are engaged in more crime than other people. And indeed, they'll try to use mental, jujitsu on you and say, well, look at all the black people locked up. Well, black people been targeted for slavery since they set foot on this continent. So, even before. So, that's not evidence that black people are criminal. And then the vast majority of black people and all people who find themselves on a prison plantation today, upwards of 80% of them are not in there for a violent crime. And I've said that time and time again. They didn't rape anyone. They didn't murder anyone. They didn't molest any children. They didn't rob a bank. They didn't do a carjacking. They are in there for non-violent, victimless crime. So-called crimes made up by politicians, which we can trace that all the way back to the 1930s in Reefer Madness, okay? Yeah. So, when you say black-on-black crime, you are promoting a myth like black people are engaged in disproportionate violence against each other. When that makes absolutely there's no factual basis to underlie that whatsoever. It's a perception. It's a perception. And again, I think that perhaps I might be incorrect, but I think that black people came up with black on black crime. But it could have been a reaction to white people, again, always trying to paint us as criminals, which they always have done. That could have been a reaction to say, let's do something. Let's do something to combat all of this. But at the time that self-destruction came out in 1988, there was no widespread violent crimes being committed. Not in any black community that I lived in. And I lived in Detroit in the 1970s. I did not see it on that level. Was there crime? Was there violence? Certainly there was. But it wasn't like, it wasn't like, let's take, for example, the number of police people kill a day. All right. So, the media tends to focus on that. But we have to stop. We have to reprogram ourselves and stop promoting this myth. Maybe, when KRS-One said it, I know for a fact that he had good intentions. All right, when he put together the Stop the Violence movement in 1988, so there for all those people that say, why don't black people do something about the crime in their communities? Well, black people have always been doing something about the crimes in their communities, Obviously, you don't know nothing about the black community, or you wouldn't be saying that. I remember Stop the Violence campaigns going on all the time during the 80s at the height of the crack cocaine epidemic. And that violence was a direct result of Ronald Reagan's and the Central Intelligence Agency plan to fund their dirty wars in South America and Central America to murder all those people, and you needed to fund those terrorists, those proxy tools you was using down there, and Congress wouldn't approve it, so you pumped cheap cocaine into the community so that you can raise the money to arm those murderous thugs that you set loose in South and Central America. And so then, as people saw how much money was being made on the streets, not as much money as, you know, those who was really in control of it, but a lot of money was being made. People saw it as a way to escape poverty and whatnot. And then they started fighting. And that's when gangs started fighting each other for control of the market share, the street market share. So that's when violence really skyrocketed. But violent crimes have been going down for over 20 years. All right. The statistics, FBI statistics. But they just keep filling up the prisons with nonviolent people. So let's just make that clear. There is no black on black crime. There is crime in the black community, just like there is global crime. Crime is happening globally. All right. But it's just crime. It doesn't need a qualifier. It doesn't need to be attributed to one race or another. It is crime. And so, you know, for you or me or I come out my mouth again with some black on black crime, if we want to talk about crime in the community, why can't we just say crime in the community? Why got to be black on black crime? Why we can't say we want to address violent crimes in the community? Why we got to say black on black crime? Just say we want to address violent crime in the community or crime in the community. Wouldn't that suffice to say that? Why we got to say black on black crime? White people don't say it. Hispanic people don't say it. Asians don't say it. I can't think of another racial classification, ethnicity, or ethnic group. None of them say that. But we say it. We say it. Sometimes we mean well when we say it, and we are not realizing what we're actually saying and what it's helping promote. And what is it helping promote? It's helping to promote crime. It's help, but not crimes within the community being perpetrated by the community members on each other, but we're promoting the crimes of the police to be perpetrated because we're giving them a justification. We need the police to come in and address all this. I'm going to stop saying it. We help promote our own destruction. We give them the ammunition that they need to take aim at our community when we use that kind of language. Now, it's particularly troubling to me when we have what I perceive to be intelligent men, certainly intelligent in the fields that they work in. Well, you know, Richard Sherman, yeah, you do have to have a football. They talk about having a high football IQ. But, you know, when he's talked in the media in the past about racism and whatnot, or you know, responding to a racist attack, he seems to be intelligent and thoughtful about the things that he said. Outspoken, not afraid, but I think he might be afraid in this case. But I'm not going to start with him first. I'm going to start with Minister Farrakhan. All right. Y'all know in a couple of past programs, I mentioned that I didn't appreciate the optics, didn't appreciate Minister Farrakhan traveling to Memphis, Tennessee, which has a high rate of police on black people crime, all right, in that city. Been talking about it for years because I know people that live in Memphis. The number of people, unarmed people, they gunning down, and then to see the minister talk about some justice or else, and then he going to go there for a justice or else mini rally, I guess, in Memphis. But he allows the police to escort him. And then not only do they escort him, these are the enemies of the community, right? Not only does he get them to escort him, but then he invites them to the hotel and he you know, holds hands with the enemy and praying with the enemy and whatnot. Now, I was critical of that. I was asking questions about it, you know, because I'm one of them people. I'm going to speak my mind. I know people seem to be afraid of the Nation of Islam and their fervent followers and whatnot, but, you know, I'm not one of them people. I'm not afraid. Don't no fear live here. All right, so anyway, let me pull up the story, and I have linked to the story. It was actually published by The Final Call, right? It's published by The Final Call. This is the name of it, 10,000 Fearless Men. Now, I'm not going to play the audio clip, but y'all remember the minister's speech. I played it, I think, during one of my programs, but I know I shared it on social media, and I was down with it. And I was like, yes, he's calling on soldiers. I don't know if he's calling on, you know, people who have actually been in the military, but he was calling for skilled black men, 10,000 of them, to address police terrorism. He didn't use the word police terrorism, but in the context of the speech he was giving, he was talking about police violence and the lack of accountability. And he said, we need 10,000 fearless black men who ain't afraid to die to address the problem. That's what he said. That's what he said. And y'all know that's what he said. But now, since white people have come after him, racist suspects and white supremacists alike, perhaps the FBI even paid him a visit to say, yo man, what is you talking about calling on 10,000 fearless black men who ain't afraid to die? You trying to start a civil war in this country? You trying to start a revolution? You know, we gonna need you to back down off of that. Or guess what? We gonna charge you with inciting terrorism or some other, you know how they can be creative with criminal charges. And guess what? Minister Farrakhan flipped that script real quick. Again, this isn't coming to you. This article isn't published by Breitbart.com, the racist white supremacist website. It ain't published by townhall.com. It ain't coming from Sean Hannity. It ain't coming from Bill O'Reilly. It's coming from The Final Call. This is an article that was written by Richard Muhammad. All right. He's even been a guest on Time for Awakening. Might have been a guest on this program, too. Anyway, this is his article. This is what he's reporting. The city of brotherly love is a great city for Islam and residents. And residents packed the Tinley Temple United Methodist Church, responding with great spirit and enthusiasm to a call to stop violence, restore order, and return a sense of community and love to black neighborhoods suffering from drugs, crime, violence, and upheaval. Nation of Islam minister Louis Farrakhan made the call amid a right-wing orchestrated controversy. I said in, and this is in quotes, this is the minister speaking, I said in a speech recently, I said I would like to see 10,000 fearless men that death is sweeter than living under tyranny. Now, living under tyranny, that is a word that is reserved for governments, not communities, not individuals. I am not raining down, if I was doing that type of stuff, I am not raining down tyranny on my children. I am not raining down, as an individual, raining down tyranny on the black community if I was going out there beating up people or whatnot. That's not, you know, tyranny is associated with governments. So let's make that clear right now. See, that's why I'm talking about the context of his original speech. He was talking about this government. He was talking about the lack of police accountability, all of this, all murdering all these people, and you're getting away with it. And he's calling on 10,000 fearless black men to step up to the plate, that ain't afraid to die, and protect our community. That's something Malcolm X said a very, very long time ago, and he never backed down from them comments. I played the clips of Malcolm X saying it. I said in a speech recently, I said I would like to see 10,000 fearless men that death is sweeter than living under tyranny. I said it three times. The next day when we put it up on our Twitter, Facebook page, they got it and said Farrakhan is calling for 10,000 fearless men to kill white people. I never said that, said Minister Farrakhan. And my words went viral, and the enemy's words attached to my words stimulated white folk. The niggers are coming to kill us. That damn Farrakhan, he's calling for a race war. They radicalized us and then blame us for the radical behavior of black people. We didn't kill the blacks who have lost their lives at the hands of police, and we are looking at on TV, he observed. Because that's who you was talking about originally. If we are being radicalized, it is your evil that is radicalizing the black man, and your evil is making us to say something must be done. Many have been asking, what does or else mean, he noted. You don't mind me saying, Justice, but the or else brought out fear, he said. Yet, Minister Farrakhan, look, let me just jump down, because I ain't got a whole lot of time, jump down to the relevant comments. And it is correct to say he did not call for a race war. He didn't say go out there. I need 10,000 fearless white men to go hunt down all the Dylan Roofs in the country. I ain't hear him say nothing like that. He was talking about police, terrorism. But he says there was no call for a race war pitting 10,000 men against heavily armed American law enforcement and citizens, said Minister Farrakhan. 10,000 fearless, well-trained men are needed to go into black neighborhoods and stand between black people aiming guns at other black people, he said. Some of us may get killed, but that's what fearlessness will cause us to do. But we got to stop the killing. We can't talk about it. We got to do it. And I'll stop there. That's talking about, he talking about some black on black crime. That ain't what he was talking about originally. Again, I understand the power of the system of racism and white supremacy. I understand they were behind assassinating Malcolm X. They were behind assassinating Dr. King. They were behind assassinating many of black leaders or forcing them to lead the country like they did Marcus Garvey. All right, I know that. But guess what? If you're fearless, we talking about 10,000 fearless men, you ain't going to back down from your comments. You're going to say what you said, and it's out there. It's out there. Interpret it. I would have said something like, and take it how you want to take it. Take it how you want to take it. Enemy good at manipulating my words, but I never called for a race war. In this country. No, I call for 10,000 fearless black men to step up in their community to prevent the police violence against people in our community. Because we keep seeing on TV person after person after person after person getting brutalized, getting beat down, getting killed. And 99.9% of the time, these thugs, these criminals are not being held accountable. That's what I would have said. I wouldn't have backed off my comments. I wouldn't have said some mess like, I wasn't talking about y'all. Wasn't talking about police. Wasn't talking about white people. I was talking about black people standing up for other black people against other black people. Now, y'all know that wasn't the context of his original comments, but I understand that maybe he got some fear. Maybe he don't want to be assassinated. Maybe he don't want to lose the lifestyle that he living and end up a political prisoner like so many of our brothers and sisters. You know, I understand fear. Doesn't mean that I'm going to give in to it, but I understand why people do. But if you come out with some propaganda like that and confusing these brothers and sisters out there in the street that's begging for us to step up, then, and you come out with this, no, I got to say something about it as a journalist and as a member of the black community. I got to say something about it. And you wrong, Mr. Farrakhan. You wrong for caving in to them white folks. I thought you was better than that. I really did. I thought you was fearless, man. I thought you was like a Malcolm X. But obviously, you know, you got some concerns about how white people is perceiving the things that you say. Now you want to act like we didn't hear what we heard. Sure, they misconstrued some of your words and took it out of context. You didn't call for no race war. I mean, like I said, I even defended him. Y'all heard me on this program defend him. That's ludicrous for them to say he calling for a race war when you got white Scientologists up in the mosque. Why would he be working with the L. Ron Hubbard's organization, the Church of Scientology, if he was talking about starting a war against white people, a race war against white people? That's just that ain't based in no kind of reality. They ain't based in no kind of facts. So yeah, they did lie on you on that. All right. But you ain't gonna tell me I didn't hear what I heard. That I thought you was doing it in a codified manner and saying we need 10,000 soldiers to step up and deal with this police terrorism, because we see the government isn't interested in practicing justice. We see that there are a whole lot of racist suspects and white supremacists who end up on these juries that keep letting these killers go. So what are we supposed to do? Just hang down our head and keep marching and keep throwing our hands up and appearing non-threatening and you know, rejecting the gun and picking up the gun and all of that kind of passive stuff, you know? No, that ain't how I was raised. And when I came into consciousness and started studying black history and black resistance to racism and white terrorism, I knew what the answer was to provide a deterrent. And so, you know, I got to be codified. I can't make it easy for the enemy to come after me. But I ain't got a problem with saying that we need to get back to what's that? There's the track that I have played, 187 on a something on a cop, you know, where they was talking about we need to get, y'all excuse my language, I'm quoting the song. We need to get back on that Panthers tip. I'll say it like that. They said it. They used, you know, the word that's the S word. But yeah, that's what we need to get back to. Organizing. But see, we scared. A lot of us are scared because we see where Mamiya's at. We see where Russell Schultz is at. We see, well, Hugo Pinnell's dead now. But yeah, we see what's happened to many of these former Panthers. We see where Sister Asada Shakur is at. And so we scared. We scared. See, they were made, those that's in prison, been tortured. That's a deterrent to keep black people from using common sense and practicing self-defense by any means necessary, as Malcolm taught us. As Malcolm preached. And the young people of his day are what became the Black Panther Party for self-defense. That's what we need to do. That's the only deterrent that there will be that I can talk about openly on these airways, that I can engage in conversation with a bunch of people I don't know. That's all I'm willing to say. But I'm just very disappointed. Well, I'm not going to say I'm disappointed, because see, I don't really idolize religious figures or anyone for that matter. I admire people. I respect people, but I do not idolize people. I do not worship people. So I'm not disappointed. I'm not going to say I'm disappointed in Minister Farrakhan. But I just wish he had not backed down on his comments. Because he's not known, he doesn't project himself as being weak. Well, this is a projection of weakness, in my opinion. Now, I'm going to play some message music, let y'all hear from Brother Malcolm and some of them Panthers. Let y'all hear from them. And then when we come back, we'll talk about Mr. Ben Carson. Let you hear what he said to Roland Martin on News One, on his program on News One News. I believe it's the name of Roland Martin's program. But I'm not surprised anything that Ben Carson says, because he's running for a position in a system of white supremacy in a section or a part of that system. Is the grand old party known as the GOP. And we know that he ain't getting that nomination without the help of racist white people. And so he got to show them that he ain't like them other niggas over there. I'm one of these good Negroes, and so I'm going to talk down and talk bad about black people and make it look like all their problems are ones that they created for themselves, and not point at the system, and not point at racist white supremacists, and not point at police terrorism. No, I'm going to point the finger at black people. Yeah, so, you know, that's to be expected from him, but I'm going to share those comments with you, because, I mean, in the past 7 days, we've been inundated with black people, including black women, that black woman they were showcasing, and another black man before that. You know, you get these black people that don't nobody know who they are, you know, except for outside of their circles, and they'll post some anti-black message to YouTube. And then next thing you know, they being featured on CNN and on Fox. So it's been a whole lot of that here in the past few months. But in the past 7 days, three high-profile black men have been promoting the myth of black-on-black crime, and you know, they need to be corrected, just like I've corrected myself. Not asking them to do anything I'm not doing myself. I am not above questioning. I am not above reproach. I am not above making mistakes. But when I recognize that I've made a mistake, I at least try to correct it. So you're listening to Black Talk Radio News, broadcasting on the independent black media radio, digital radio station, Black Talk Radio Network.com. Stay tuned.
This is Sean Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Hit me! Monroe, North Carolina. The town where local NAACP president Robert Williams created headlines when he said, "Sometimes violence must be met with violence." Many asked why.
You know, we do whatever we do to survive.
Drop it!
Some of the people who have thought that it would be better to accelerate cases violently, I have been able to persuade them that we should use the courts and go into the courts. So this thing had boomeranged, and I was being held responsible for having brought these cases to court. There was a trial where a Negro maid had been kicked down a flight of stairs by a white man, and that this man hadn't even bothered to come to his own trial, and that he had also been acquitted. And there was a demonstration as a result of this in the courtroom by the Negro women of the community. And they had approached me and had said, "Well, you said that you would see that these people would be punished because through the organization we would have competent counsel, and that if it hadn't been for you, that these people would have been punished." And they wanted to know what I would recommend that they do from then on. And so I recommended that they meet violence with violence, that Negroes must be prepared to repulse attack, that they must be willing to fight, that they must be willing to die and to kill if necessary, that there was no law, there was no 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution of equal protection in the South, and that therefore they didn't have any deterrent, so they would have to create the deterrent for themselves by meeting violence with violence.
I'm the Deputy Chairman of the State of Illinois Black Panther Party, Fred Hampton. I have the pleasure now to introduce who I believe is one of the baddest motherfuckers in the world. A man that did something that a lot of us ought to be very glad that he did. He was a part of making the only party which exists in the United States today that represents the people. As a matter of fact, he was one half. Him and Huey P. Newton started out in 1966. Sometimes I think where some of us were in 1966. I think what we would have said if we'd heard about some niggas going out the street talking about carrying the gun, fighting all them police because we didn't know they were pigs out there in the street. And I think I'm speaking for the whole party of the state of Illinois. I know I am. When I say that we love Huey P. Newton, we love Elvis Cleaver, we love Bobby Hutton, we love the Black Panther Party, and we love Chairman Bobby C. We love them because they were the first ones that took a stand against capitalism and racism and said that we'll fight until the end. We said we draw the line somewhere, motherfucker. If you try to pass us, we'll blow your brains out. They were the first ones that came through with the program that was initiated for the benefit of the people. All those things that I named, the reason why we love them, are reasons that make it beneficial to us. But let me simply say when I'm introducing Brother Bobby, that we love him. Because it's lovely to love. Tell me about the
team. All right, we here for some jive conspiracy. You know what we're going to do?
We are going to defend ourselves. Because Huey P. Newton said that power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. Power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. What kind of phenomena? Social phenomena. What is the social phenomena? Black people, Mexican American, any kind of people, begins to learn that the social phenomena is that, in fact, U.S. racist, decadent, capitalist, imperialist America is a holy state. And a holy state exists here, that these pigs are doing nothing but protecting the average businessman and the demagogic politicians, protecting the exploitative system that they got going. That in fact, we are tired of it, we are sick of it, you've been brutalizing black people, you've been murdering and lynching them, black people are tired of it. That could be vanguard revolution all of a sudden, and it's phenomenally correct also, but we are concerned with that social phenomena. We are concerned with that exploitation. We are concerned with the oppression that black people and all other people in the world who are suffering the same common oppression that we are suffering today. The thing is that we have the ability to define it. Still, if we have the ability to define it, the only next thing to do is get organized. So when a pig walks up to you, or a pig gets a job with the people, you'll be so organized, you'll be learning some tactics, you'll be learning some revolutionary principles, you'll be having some guns hit out somewhere, you have some proper tactics. That when the pig gets a job with you, the pig gets wrong, you whoop your guns out on him, blow him away, and then you have the ability, in fact, you have made that pig act in a desired manner.
The police the same way. They put their club upside your head and then turn around and accuse you of attacking them. Every case of police brutality against a Negro follows the same pattern. They attack you, bust you all upside your mouth, and then take you to court and charge you with assault. What kind of democracy is that? What kind of freedom is that? What kind of social or political system is it when a black man has no voice in court, has no nothing on his side other than what the white man chooses to give? My brothers and sisters, we have to put a stop to this. And it will never be stopped until we stop it ourselves. They attack the victim. And then the criminal who attacked the victim accuses the victim of attacking him. This is American justice. This is American democracy.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
And welcome back. Yes, indeed. We are broadcasting from behind these enemy lines known as USA Inc. Now, let me play for you the comments of one Dr. Ben Carson, who is a presidential candidate. I think he even creeped up on Donald Trump even closer, because he's singing the right tune with them racist suspects in the, that make up the base of the GOP party. All right, he knows how to talk bad about black people in a codified manner, you know, but I'm not falling for it. All right, so this is him. He was on News One with Roland Martin, and this is what he had to say to Roland, who was asking him questions about his thoughts on Black Lives Matter.
Your assessment of Black Lives Matter movement and the effect that they have had on forcing America to confront police brutality as well as police corruption.
Okay. Well, what I have said consistently and written about, yes, Black Lives Matter, but I believe all Black Lives Matter. And I am very disappointed that the movement doesn't recognize that the carnage in the black community coming about through institutions like Planned Parenthood and crime upon each other is very significant. And we need to be looking at the things that are keeping the black community from accelerating, like rotten school systems and, you know, tolerating the drugs that are in our neighborhood.
But also, I believe in staying in your lane. So here you have Black Lives Matter, which is focused on social justice and police accountability. So the question I have for you is, and I get your point, but have you challenged pro-lifers to say, why are you not dealing with these other issues? Why aren't you dealing with the death penalty?
Have
you challenged? So because, again, I get organizations, and so if they say this is the focus we wanted to be on, if another group says we want to focus on education, we want to focus on the issue of abortion, what I'm saying is, from the organizational standpoint, can't individuals say we want to focus on this as opposed to say it needs to be all encompassing?
But that's my very point. It does have to be all encompassing. Because, for instance, when you're talking about what's going on in the inner cities with lack of education and with poverty, one of the things that's happening is we have 73% babies being born out of wedlock. Now, I can't just go and tell people, let's make sure that there are no abortions and that we have all these babies around. I got to talk about how do we create a situation where those women can take advantage of child care so that they can get their GED and their associate's degree and their bachelor's degree, and they can learn to be self-sufficient and they can teach that to their children. Unless you take that whole conglomerate, you know, you're just going to be wasting your time.
But my point is, if you have different organizations focused on different things, I mean, that's what they do. So why are you asking Black Lives Matter movement to say you need to focus on all of this as opposed to what they're focused on? Because here's the reality. In the last year, 40 new laws have been passed in 24 states. They are forcing a conversation that, frankly, wasn't happening before. And so what they are working on, frankly, has been effective. But you're saying, no, shift it to something else.
What I'm saying is I want them to be successful, and they're going to be a lot more successful if they don't alienate a big part of the community.
Who are they alienating?
Let me stop right there, and it's about, about two more minutes, and I'm gonna play that, but I have to stop because I'm not taking notes right now. I'm taking mental notes. Oh Lord, man, where to start? But right from the top, he is deflecting. He's deflecting from the question. The question was, you know, from an organizational and kudos to Roland Martin for holding his feet to the fire and not allowing him to play mental gymnastics and get him unfocused off his question. His question was about organizations. All right. So you do have a black organization. I think they call MAFA 21. I may be mistaken in that. But there is an organization of black people, and they're mainly black conservatives, that focus on abortion in the community. All right. They have paid for billboards talking about the number of black people who have been killed, you know, in the womb. All right. They have talked about the origins of the eugenics movement. Margaret Sanger, one of the founders of Planned Parenthood, and the racist things she has said about black people and whatnot. All right. So are you asking MAFA 21 to address police violence in the community? Are you asking MAFA to focus on poverty in the community and creating jobs? That is not their mission. That is not their stated mission as a organization. All right. And Black Lives Matter, there is a organization now called Black Lives Matter. They're developing chapters across the nation. All right. As an organization, they are focused on police terrorism and the lack of accountability for those cops who commit murders and acts of brutality against unarmed people in our community. All right. So, you know, him want to talk about all these other issues is he don't want to talk about police terrorism. All right. Yes, it's true that black education, the education system isn't serving black people very well because it's programming all our children with racism and white supremacy lies about history, portraying some of the most vile human beings ever to walk this earth as the founding fathers who were these great visionaries and blah, 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 blah. But that ain't got nothing to do with police terrorism. They ain't got nothing to do with it. So all he's doing is trying to sidestep the question and ask things of other people that he ain't even doing himself. And what do I mean by he's not doing it himself? And I'm not going to play no more of that because I got two other stories I want to get to. But let me ask you this. What is Ben Carson? What is he known for? He's known for being what? A brain surgeon. The first, or neurosurgeon, something, you know, same thing. The first doctor to successfully separate conjoined twins who were joined at the head, by the head, sharing, you know, brains touching each other or connected. He did the first successful separation. I don't know if it's conjoined twins or. Yeah, I don't want to say Siamese twins because that's racist. But yeah, conjoined twins. So he has a specialty as a doctor that he's focused on. He ain't focused on the entire body. He isn't focused on the feet, which I think that's called podiatry. He ain't focused on plastic surgery. You know, he ain't focused on prostate. You know, he's not a cancer specialist. He's not focused on prostate cancer he's not a proctologist focusing on, you know, the anus and all of that. He's not. He is, as a doctor, focused on one specific area. He has studied once. Why didn't he become a general practitioner? Why isn't he focused on the entire body? Why is he just focused on the brain? You know, I think he's retired now. So that's the way I'm looking at him. You asking only Black Lives Matter to focus on all this other stuff because you don't want them focusing on the police. Well, let me put it this way. the people that support you don't want you focusing on police terrorism. They want you to act like it don't exist. Or that black people are bringing it all on themselves. Well, he's being a hypocrite in his own professional life. He didn't go to school to study to be a general practitioner. He didn't go to be a pediatrician and just focus on helping children medically. No, he specialized in one specific medical issue dealing with the human body, the brain. So he's being ridiculous and purposely so. Should I go? I mean, I've heard people criticize PETA. Y'all know who PETA is, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and say, you know, why all they care about is animals? They don't care about people. Well, that's kind of asinine. That's kind of stupid to say. How you know they don't care about people? You don't know what the individual founders of PETA, what else they might be doing, you know, what other projects they may be lending a hand to. They just not leading it, you know. But they care about animals, and they saw that there's no organization focused on the mistreatment of animals. So they started an organization with a specific mission of focusing on the mistreatment of animals. So by Ben Carson's logic, what they should be doing is to help animals better so that they could succeed in better helping animals not be mistreated. They should focus on homelessness. They should focus on feeding the hungry. They should focus on preventing abortions by humans. Do you see how ludicrous that answer he's given? That's ludicrous, man. That's ludicrous. And I'm quite frankly, you know, just, I've been tired of all of these showcase black people that get up there and engage in proxy racism as the tools of racist white supremacists. He's talking about black. Why don't they care about the drugs in their community? That's crazy, man. That's crazy. And again, the whole, what I believe, I could be incorrect, but when I was a young person in my 20s, KRS-One, Public Enemy, I can't remember all their names, and Miss Melody, and I, man. I'm drawing a blank on all those artists I used to listen to in my youth. I still listen to them, just not as much. But they came together in 1988 and they produced Self-Destruction. Talking about, you know, Kumo D, his famous line, "I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan and I shouldn't have to run from a black man." When the Black Panthers were active, they weren't, you know, and that was a large organization. And because they were so large, they were focused on other issues. They were focused on health. That's how they started the health clinics, free health clinics, developed the sickle cell testing. A lot of people don't know that. The free breakfast program for the children and the food pantry for the poor and all of those different things. But they had people that came in that was their focus, knowing your role. Okay, you're a teacher, you work with children in the public education system. Well, we're going to have you working with children in an after school program, teaching them how to read or giving them that black history they ain't getting from the white supremacist school. Or, okay, you a street soldier, you ex-Vietnam veteran, you got some military training and whatnot. Yeah, we gonna put you out there on the pig patrol and have you patrolling the community to make sure ain't none of these pig cops out here beating in black people's heads. But again, Black Lives Matter as an organization ain't even 1 year old. And I'm not saying that they should try to be the next Black Panther Party. They had to find their own way as a organization. And I'm perfectly okay if all they want to focus on, instead of being distracted by other issues, because there's plenty of other people to work on those issues, I'm perfectly okay with them just focusing on police terrorism, modern day slavery and human trafficking, and the lack of accountability when these cops slam people on the ground. Not once, not twice, not three times, but four times and even five times, as with the cop up there in New York City who was seen on video slamming former tennis pro James Blake. So Ben Carson is full of it. And as and by extension, he is practicing racism. And let me clarify that. No, black people cannot be racist. We are not racist. We don't have I'm not going to say we don't have the economic power, but we haven't pooled our resources economically enough to where we can even control the political establishment. So we don't control the politics. We don't control none of the institutions in this country, other than the ones we create ourselves. And then even then, if you look at the NAACP and the National Action Network, they get a lot of their funding from who? White supremacists, corporations. So we don't control none of that. So we can't practice racism. You have to have power to practice racism against other people. So we don't practice racism. Do we have biases? Do we have bigots among us? Most certainly we do. But that's not the same thing as being a racist. That's not the same thing as institutional racism. It is not the same thing as structural racism, societal. No, it's not the same thing. Just like Ben Carson trying to bring up all these other issues and try to tie them to police terrorism, it's not the same thing. Those are separate issues, and there are separate groups that focus on that. Like he mentioned education, and I agree. The education system is crappy for black people. That's why, as an organization, the Black Talk Media Project, which manages the Black Talk Radio Network with the sole mission of raising the profile of independent black voices and providing a safe space for black people to use technology to communicate with each other across great distances and discuss whatever it is we want to discuss. That's my sole mission. Now, as a journalist, as a political, social political commentator, yeah, I talk about those issues and I bring on people who represent organizations that focus on the separate issues, just like we were helping to promote the Black Homeschool Expo that happened in Atlanta last month. I want to, and while my desire to turn this old trailer that I used to live in that still sits on our property into a community education center, I want to educate them in media, in technology. I'm not a math teacher. I'm not an English teacher. Those aren't my disciplines. So I'm not trying to start a black charter school, because that's not in my area of expertise. And that's the point that Mr. Roland Martin was trying to make to Ben Carson. Now, I'm, you know, there are book smarts, there are street smarts, and then there's what's called not so common sense. Just cause a person graduates from Harvard or graduates from whatever in whatever discipline, and again, that's another example. When people go to college to get a degree, they're not getting a degree covering everything that's being taught in that school. They may take electives and stuff like that to round out their education, but their main discipline is one area, just like him, neurosurgery. So I don't know if Ben Carson just doesn't get it, but I suspect that he does get it. Because I'm not going to say that the man is dumb or he's ignorant about this or ignorant about that. No, he blowing racist dog whistles because he is trying to secure his place in the racist party of the GOP. So that's why he's saying what he's saying. Now, I'm going to move on. I'm not even going to play the rest of that clip. I'm going to move on. And again, you know, if you got questions, comments, get them in. 704-951-5030. It's the studio line. The conference line, 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound. Of course, if you already dialed in, just hit *6 and 1 to come on air. Finally, I want to talk about Richard Sherman. And I am going to touch upon the story of Ahmed Mohammed. I think he's 14 years old, arrested, put in handcuffs, made to do the perp walk, put into a juvenile detention facility, and they got a lot of them down there in Texas. So I'm not forgetting, I will get to that. But yeah, want to talk about Richard Sherman. Let me let y'all hear what Richard Sherman had to say. And then too, you know, now I understand Roland Martin asking Ben Carson the question, but what's up with these sports reporters asking NFL players what they think about Black Lives Matter? That was an appropriate question for Roland Martin or anyone else who focuses on social and political issues in terms of their job. It's totally appropriate for him to ask those questions of Ben Carson or anyone else. But when you got sports reporters asking athletes, professional athletes, what they think about Black Lives Matter, there's an agenda there. There's an agenda there to put black people on the spot and get them on record so that you can cause, you know, possibly some harm to come to them by losing endorsements or whatnot. But I'm not going to sit up here and justify not speaking truth to power as an athlete, because you're worried about, you know, getting corporate endorsements from Adidas or whoever you're getting, you know, endorsements from. But I do want to note that I think it's an act of racism, and it's totally inappropriate to be asking an athlete what he thinks about Black Lives Matter. But with that said, this is Richard Sherman being asked about what he thinks about Black Lives Matter.
Before we get started, I'm going to address the, because there was some article written, you know, if you guys have seen it, talking about King Noble and all this. I did not write that article. A lot of people had sent it to me over the weekend, but I just thought this would be the best place to address it. There were some points in that article or in that post that were relevant and I could agree with. But there were also some obviously ignorant points in there. I don't think it's any times a time to call out for an all-out war against police or, you know, any race of people. I thought that was an ignorant statement. But as a black man, I do understand that black lives matter. You know, I stand for that. I believe in that wholeheartedly. But I also think that there's a way to go about things and there's a way to do things. And I think the issue at hand needs to be addressed internally before we move on, because from personal experience, you know, you have living in the hood, living in a inner city, you deal with things, you know, you deal with people dying, dealt with a best friend getting killed, and it was 2 35-year-old black men, you know, and wasn't no police officer involved, wasn't anybody else involved, and I didn't hear anybody shouting Black Lives Matter then. And I think that's the point we need to get to, is that we need to deal with our own internal issues before we move forward and start pointing fingers and start attacking other people. We need to solidify ourselves as people and deal with our issues, because I think as long as we have black on black crime and black, you know, one black man killing another, you know, if black lives matter, then they should matter all the time. You know, you should never let somebody get killed. That's somebody's son, that's somebody's brother, that's somebody's friend. So you should always keep that in mind. And there's a lot of dealings with police officers right now. I don't think all cops are bad. You know, I think there's some great cops out there who do everything in their power to uphold the badge and uphold the honor and protect the people out in society, but there are bad cops, and I think that also needs to be addressed. I think police officers we have right now, you know, some of it is being brought to light because of video cameras. Everybody has a camera phone, but these are things a lot of us have dealt with our whole lives, and I think right now is the perfect time to deal with it. You know, it's the climate we're in, the everything, everybody's being more accepting, you know, so I think the ignorance should stop. You know, I think people should realize that at the end of the day, we're all human beings. So, you know, before we're black, white, Asian, Polynesian, Latino, we're humans. So, you know, it's up to us to stop it. Thank you. That would go.
All right, we will leave it there. And, yeah, I've heard of King Noble. He has a YouTube channel. He obviously, he's on Facebook and whatnot. I cannot tell you that much about him because I don't consume the media that he puts out. I might have watched one or two videos and, you know, I just don't follow him. You know, I'm too busy producing my own media and helping other people produce their media. And he's not one of those that avails himself of the services of the Black Talk Media Project, and we just don't take anybody, though. I just don't help anybody, as some of them black conservatives out there. But anyway, his comments weren't so bad, but I felt like he was also giving in to the pressure of white supremacy and to say all the right things so that he doesn't lose any endorsements or there are no bad write-ups about him. And if somebody wrote some propaganda and attached his name to it and he didn't say something and you were lying on him, then, you know, shame on you. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't be dragging people into stuff and saying they said something when they didn't say anything. I don't know what he's talking about. I haven't seen the post, haven't read the post, don't plan on reading the post. So if that's why he's responding, then certainly he's responding. But he could have left the black on black stuff out of there because it's a myth. And he's saying that, again, let me correct him. He's saying that when he's probably considerably younger than me. I think he's still in his 20s. And he's saying that when his friend got killed by some old black dudes, that older black men, that nobody said Black Lives Matter then. Well, maybe you just didn't hear it. Maybe you was too young. Maybe you was caught up into some other stuff. But again, I'm 47 years old. I'll be 48 here soon. And I remember hip hop addressing those issues in our community. I bet he listened to Tupac. Right before I came on air, I was playing Tupac, Keep Your Head Up. What was Tupac talking about in Keep Your Head Up? He was talking to our sisters and he was talking to the brothers and telling them to stop mistreating our women. Don't be committing crime in the community and things of that. That's what Tupac was saying. So I know he heard Tupac. He probably listening to Tupac. He probably from the Tupac generation. I'm older than Tupac, but maybe not that much older than he would have been if he had not been killed, which they say the FBI had something to do with that. But anyway, there will have always been people, as long as I can remember, who have been addressing crime in the community. Not black on black crime, because it's a mythical being, but crime in the community. They have, again, Black Panther Party used to address drug dealers in the community dealing drugs to children or engaged in some kind of violent activity. Fred Hampton, I played his clip during the top of the hour break. He was very good at working with different gangs and getting them to set aside their differences in the street and transform themselves into political organizations, street organizations involved in the social political issues in their community. There have always been people in our community addressing the ills in our community, because ain't nobody else trying to address those ills in our community. Do you really think for 1 minute that the same people that's pumping drugs and gun into the community is going to solve the problem? They create the problem. They ain't going to solve the problem. They're going to act like they're addressing the problem, but they are the problem. So he's incorrect. He's incorrect to say black lives didn't matter back then. Black lives have always mattered to black people. And they've always engaged in self-defense. But then here's another thing. Ain't none of these protesters that I have interviewed, any of these people that associate themselves with Black Lives Matter, the hashtag or the organization or, you know, the movement, which, you know, I kind of hesitate calling it a Black Lives Matter movement because, damn it, this has been a continuous movement for hundreds of years. So it's not a Black Lives Matter movement. It's a movement for black liberation from white domination in this country. Indeed, even globally, internationally. So, again, maybe he was getting emotional because his friend was killed and whatnot. And I lived that street life. I was a gangbanger at 12 and 13 years old. Some of my friends didn't make it past 16. When I left Detroit at 13, and then I came back about 3 years later hunting down my best friend, because neither one of us, although I had older brothers, they were down south because, you know, we had a different mothers, but they were down south. I didn't have nobody look out for me. I had to get out there to fight and fight to survive them streets. And so I had a best friend. He had an older sister. He ain't had no older brothers. So we became brothers. We looked out for each other. 3 years later, I go back up there looking for him. He's dead. Before he even turned 16. So I've been out there in them streets. And even then, there were people out there telling us, as young people, y'all shouldn't be out here doing what you're doing. There were movements to get us to get back on the right path. So all of this garbage about it ain't never matter. But getting back to these protesters and these demonstrators and whatnot, ain't none of them out there gunning down. That young man we talked to from South Carolina last night, part of the Black Lives chapter down there in South Carolina, the Max brought on New Abolitionist Radio. He ain't out there gunning down nobody. He ain't out there shooting up his community. Ain't none of them black women we've been seeing on TV interrupting these candidates or talking to Hillary Clinton or on MSNBC. They ain't out there killing nobody. They ain't out there shooting nobody. So how is your comments even appropriate to be applying to them? Stop falling for the mass media programming. Stop giving in to the pressure of white supremacists. You ought to expect to be put on the spot, and you should already have a ready answer. Or you just say no comment. Don't engage in anti-blackness or affirming these racist white supremacists. Because that's really what you're doing. Well, these white racists that don't give a damn about us, they raise millions of dollars for Darren Wilson. You know, they're right. What about black on black crime? No, man. Come on, Richard. I took you to be more astute than that. You graduated from Stanford, right? Again, you know, that don't matter. But he's not a dumb person. I've heard him speak on other things. He is not a ignorant person. But he got put on the spot, and he feeling that pressure, and he want to say the right things. He want to ride the fence. It's the best way to put it. He want to ride the fence. He want to be down with the people in the street, but at the same time, he don't want to alienate corporate America. You can't do that. Can't do that. Can't be in both camps, brother. And nobody's saying you have to endorse people like King Noble, who's out there calling for a war on cops and all this and that, and to go out and assassinate police officers, that's incorrect. For him to be, if he said that, I don't know that he did. I don't know if he the one to put it out. It could have been a fake profile. I don't know, King Noble. I don't know if he said it or not. But if he did said it, he even incorrect in saying it, cause he's being uncodified. And then if he ain't being snatched up, like I've seen some of these people in the media that make bombastic comments and whatnot, but they never seem to get arrested. Well, that should be a clue that they are agents for the system, that they are either FBI informants or they're cops or whatever, undercover cops, intelligence officers, whatever. Because why else would they not be arresting these people if they actually... I ain't heard nothing in the news about King Noble being arrested. If he actually called for a war on cops, I'm sure the FBI would have paid him a visit like I think they paid Minister Faircon a visit when he talked about the 10,000 fearless black men to stand up to these thugs and these criminals with badges. And I'm paraphrasing his words, but that was the context of his original statement. So, anyway, we have to guard our eyes, guard our ears from this programming. We have to also strengthen our resolve not to cave in and assist racists and uphold the system of white supremacy. Nobody's perfect. We all stumble sometimes. We do incorrect things, and we hope to get those things corrected if someone points it out to us or we see it in ourselves, because we should be engaged in daily self-reflection. How can I better myself? What should I stop doing so that I'm not aiding the system? Well, one of those things that I'm have identified within myself is I need to stop in conversation or on these airways using that phrase or terminology, black on black crime, because it's a myth and it helps promote propaganda that says black people are criminals, that the majority of black people are criminals. Because I don't see millions of black people in there. They say there's 40 million of us. I don't see millions of black people out there killing the other one, another million black. I don't see that happening. And you don't either. So let's not overblow things, okay? And the same thing's happening in every community, because guess what? Every community has criminals in it. Some are forced into a life of crime. Others are just, I guess, that's their nature. They have a criminal nature. They might have something wrong with them. I don't know why people choose, you know, to do crime when, you know, there seems no obvious reason for them to do it. I don't know why all these wealthy kids that engage in drunk driving and kill a truckload of Mexican immigrants. I don't know why that kid did that. Ain't nobody forced him to become, to use alcohol and drink and drive. And certainly he wasn't living in poverty, or I don't know. Some people just criminals, I guess. But let's just call them that. Criminals. Let's just refer to crime in anyone's community as crime. We don't have to call it white on white crime or Hispanic on Hispanic crime or Native American on a Native American crime. It's crime, man. That's all it is. Criminals do crime. And let's address the issues that underlying this crime. Let's address the fact that the DEA is smuggling drugs into our communities. Let's address that. And call for the prosecution of Michelle Lionheart and every DEA agent involved in that. Let's prosecute Oliver North for his crimes of facilitating a massive drug trafficking trade so that they could raise money to arm terrorists in South and Central America to overthrow democratically elected presidents and governments. Let's address those things. to address all this crime. But again, stop using the term black on black crime. Even if you mean it in all sincerity, fine, just call it crime, man. Just call it crime. That's all it is. It's not black on black crime. It's just criminals doing crime. Now, I'm running a little over. So you know what? I'ma say this story. Y'all can read it, what I've written. But I'ma say this story for tomorrow because I don't want to keep Brother Dave waiting and those waiting on Tando Radio Show to come on air. But tomorrow I will talk about Ahmed Mohammed, his story, and the proxy racist tool in the picture, the black cop. Because, you know, like somebody wrote when I made a post on Facebook saying, well, that brother got to pay bills. Yeah, so did slave catchers and slave traders. They have bills, too. So you justifying their behavior? And it's not to attack this black man personally, but just to get try to get you inside my mind and how I view the system of racism and white supremacy, because I believe that while you can't end it, it's going to take white people to stop practicing racism and turn in other white people who are racist, like that cop in Oregon did to his police chief. They are going ultimately going to be the ones to end it. But if we quit participating in it, if we say, no, I don't think it's right, that's just a digital clock. I'm not arresting this young man. I'm not putting no handcuffs on him. There ain't no explosive device. Y'all out y'all freaking mind. Y'all wasting my time, and I got robbers and rapists to be tracking down, and y'all get pulling me in here for that man. That ain't what he did, though. Now, that's what I'm talking about. If we don't participate as tools of racism, then we could drastically reduce its impact globally. Because, again, I'm going to close out with this. White supremacy, the system of racism and white supremacy, I view it as a mathematical equation. Like 1 + 1 = 2. Well, white racist and non-white proxy equals white supremacy. That's what I think. With that said, I want to thank you all for tuning in. We didn't get any phone calls today, so I'm going to assume that you were all in agreement. But I'll be back on air tomorrow at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time with another episode of Black Talk Radio News. Remember, we are taking donations for the 2015 fundraiser so I can address media education in my community as Dr. Carson suggests, you know, but that I'm, yeah. So make a donation to our North Carolina-based nonprofit Black Talk Media Project if you find what we do to be needed. Recognize the fact that we live on in Battlefield America behind these enemy lines of USA Inc. Casualties being created every day. So you need to develop that battlefield skill, that battlefield awareness, also known as situational awareness. You need to develop codification so that you know the proper way to interact with people in different scenarios so that you don't become a neo-slave, a slave in a way for corporations, or just being sitting in a cell generating profit for these people. Or so you don't become dead. All right? Develop that. Peace and blessings to all.